Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Justine Bertolo, also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program. I know we're going to have a wonderful show today. We have Alan Brown on. Alan is an ADHD coach. He is also the founder of ADD Crusher Videos, and he and I are going to be talking about mindfulness, and Alan actually has some shortcuts for all of us called Zen Hacks, so I'm really looking forward to having him on the show with me today. Before we get Alan on, I'm not sure he's called in yet. He has. Okay, first, I want to give everybody the call-in number. For later on in the show, if anybody wants to call in and ask myself or Alan some questions, the number is 917-889-7025. And again, before we start, I do want to just mention, for those of you who are in the Los Angeles area on Wednesday night, I run a powerful adult support group for ADHD, and it's through CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD, and it's on Wednesday nights from 7:30 to 9. It's a $5 cost. It's a powerful group. We've got a lot of growth in that group, so I would really hope that those of you who live in the area would please come by. The address is 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. The name of the building that it's in is the Center for Learning Unlimited. Also, in addition to that, my book is out, and it's on Amazon for sale, ADD Land, The Gift of ADD. It's also on my website at missadd.com. So, Alan, are you there?
I am indeed. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and I'm delighted to be here.
Great. So, listen, Alan, for those of us who don't know a lot about you, I was wondering if maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what you do and the ADD Crusher videos.
Oh, will do, and I'll give you a little bit more background on that because I think a lot of folks might be able to identify with the kind of past that I've had.
Okay.
I wasn't diagnosed until I was 36.
Okay.
Struggled through school, took 10 years to finish a four-year degree, a lot of drug abuse, some crime, actually, just a lot of stupid behavior that was in large part a result of undiagnosed ADHD. But I got diagnosed and... things really, of course, the light bulb switched on, as it does for so many of us with that late-in-life diagnosis. And I had already begun unwittingly to put together some strategies that were helping me, but once I was diagnosed, I was able to kind of put that on turbocharge. And
great.
I built a set of what are very powerful techniques. Some are these kind of brain hacks, Zen brain hacks,
okay.
But others that are a little bit more in the we'll call the traditional mode of coaching and coping strategies. But today, as you mentioned, we're going to be talking mostly about these Zen brain hacks. And the thing I find most liberating about these is that they do take a little bit of practice, but they don't take a lot of effort, so to speak. And you don't have to go out and buy a planner. You don't have to go to a special website. What you're really doing is just changing the way you view something in your mind. And that frees you up for action and puts you into a position where you can stop procrastinating and get moving with things.
Right. Yeah, mindfulness is extremely powerful. I think you and I talked a little bit about I use it not only with my individual clients, but in my adult support group, and it actually changed my life. Like you, I was diagnosed at age 40, and you know, that really opened my eyes to my life prior to being diagnosed, and learned a lot in the past 5 years just about how powerful mindfulness can be in when you stay in the moment, how all the scatteredness and losing things, that's been a big thing for me. A big eye-opener, because years ago I'd be putting my keys in the refrigerator and walking around the house for 2 hours trying to find them. But when you're in the moment, when you're using the mindfulness techniques, you really remember where you put things, and it's very easy to find them. So I think that's exciting for people who are listening that have never really tried to use the mindfulness in a positive way to help with the ADHD brain.
Right. And I think that's a great point, which is there are many techniques for seeing and for remembering things
right.
and not forgetting things and not losing things. And, for instance, and I wanted to just mention again about the videos, I created these videos because when I was diagnosed, I couldn't learn coping strategies from books because 30% of ADDers are dyslexic and the other 70%, most of them, really are not big readers. So
you're right. You're very visual.
To teach these strategies, and one of which I teach is called Seeing is Remembering, where we use our visual spatial learning style, which is our typical learning style for ADDers, to help you stop losing and forgetting things. But back
right.
to your point, which is, you know, there are, just as there are a lot of solutions like the one I teach about Seeing is Remembering, there are also mindfulness solutions to a lot
right.
of these problems.
Right.
Reducing, not just reducing stress, but also very practical things. And we can get, we'll
right.
get into some of those.
Okay. And I think that the biggest step for me and for all the people that I work with in Los Angeles is the first step is really becoming self-aware. When you are self-aware
mm-hmm.
of what your negative symptoms are, because not everybody has the same, as I like to call them, negative symptoms of ADD. Everybody's are different. But I think for the most part, we all have issues with attentiveness and follow-through and procrastination. And a big one is emotional regulation because ADD, as I'm sure you know, is a disability of regulation. So we have a hard time when an emotion comes up for us, comes over us like a tidal wave. And if you ever got caught in a wave, it's very hard to get out. So the mindfulness in working with that can really help with the emotional regulation. But first you have to become self-aware. And I think
yeah.
you have to talk to other people as well to find out what's the behaviors that you're seeing about me or, you know, what can you tell me about myself? Because sometimes we just don't see them. I don't know if you experience this, but a lot of people I have in before I was diagnosed and then going back and looking, I'm thinking of how my behaviors really interrupted a lot of my close relationships that I wasn't aware of.
Mm-hmm. I think there are two parts of this, and one is, of course, when someone has the benefit of being diagnosed with ADHD, you know, as I said, that light bulb goes off, and it helps you understand a lot of your behaviors. But you also, as you say, Justine, you want to be able to further flesh out what these behaviors mean for people around you and help you better understand them in the context of your social world. But also,
exactly.
this really gets to the core of what mindfulness is about. If you were to define mindfulness kind of formally, if you will, it is a noun that it means awareness and acceptance of one's thoughts and feelings, or
right.
metacognition, which is, metacognition means thoughts about thoughts. And
right.
if you just got it a little bit more into the habit of giving thought to what you are thinking and how you are thinking on a regular basis, because let's face it, most of us go through a typical day not really stopping to think about what our thoughts are. We just go
right.
and we're on autopilot. But
right.
mindfulness is that very powerful means of stopping and pausing, and this is the key word, pausing, which is the thing that, as you mentioned, just ADDers are not as good at, to take stock of your thoughts, examine them, and determine whether this is the best thought process for you to be going through right now.
And the other thing, Alan, too, that I teach people and is in the Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, which is a huge book for people, really want to change their life. This is an incredible book. It's the whole idea of when a thought comes up, a negative thought, not to engage in that thought, to just notice it. Because when we start to engage in these negative thoughts, and let's face it, for those of us who were diagnosed later on in life, we have a lot to deal with in our past, those negative schemas. I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, I heard I was lazy, I was stupid, I was a procrastinator. Those kind of things stay with you. So therefore, you kind of develop that negative thought pattern. And so one of the things we work on in group and individually with clients I work with is don't engage in those thoughts if they come up and they're negative. It's similar to what you're saying, but sometimes we even get in trouble by engaging in them. Let's just notice them. They're not a part of us. They're like, we brought in 30 balloons one night to the group, and we had people sit there holding the balloons. And I said to them, now, what would it be like if you took those balloons into your car every morning, or you took those balloons into the shower with you, or into a meeting? Those are your thoughts. And if you take all those thoughts with you instead of just noticing them, releasing them into the sky, and watching them like you do clouds, they're not a part of you.
This is brilliant. I love that. The balloon exercise is just brilliant. And when you can bring a physical example like that to the fore, that's a very powerful way of teaching it. It will be remembered.
Yeah.
But I want to add to that, that what we're talking about here, by the way, is negative self-talk. And this is a well-documented, well-researched area of psychology. And we know two things scientifically about negative self-talk. Well, three. One, ADDers do it more than non-ADDers. And
as you mentioned,
a lot of it is because of the many things that we have done and been told and conditioned. I mean, my nickname growing up, I thought my name was Dummy for a long time people were saying, Dummy, what are you doing? That is part of why ADDers tend to engage more in negative self-talk. But,
right.
The first thing to know about negative self-talk from a scientific perspective is that when you are engaged in these negative thoughts, you are creating a stressful physiology for yourself.
That's exactly right.
You are creating more of cortisol, which is the stress hormone that is associated with inflammation. And while it's needed in the human body to survive, excess of it is harmful to our health, to our immune system, and it can be associated with higher indications of cancer, et cetera. The second scientific finding that we have, and this is more recently, a book by Barbara Fredrickson called Positivity, details the research behind the quantification of negative versus positive thoughts.
Right.
And what she finds in her research is that if you can turn the table, so to speak, such that you are having five positive thoughts for every negative thought, you can begin to see changes in your life and in your health and in the way you view everything. So
brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And one of the things we also work with are mantras. And I know for myself, every day when I get up, before my feet hit the floor, I choose happiness. And if I choose happiness, it's very difficult for me because I chose it to have a bad day. And so positive self-talk, and you know, years ago, when I first started to go through this process, I used to laugh at people that would say, go look in the mirror and talk to yourself positively. I used to say, are you kidding me? That's not going to work. You know, I'm from New York, and you really have to make me see things before I'll do them. But I started to really talk positive things to myself about, instead of saying, I can't do that, I lost the word can't. And I started to say, you know what, I'm going to try to do that. And this is going to be a good day. And all those positive things. And, you know, I tell so many people that I work with that if you could just start off on that way, it would really put you in a much better place. It's positive psychology. And I've done a lot of research on that, too. And it really works if you work it. Doing the work is the most important thing.
Perfect segue into one of the practicals and brain hacks that I want to share.
Okay.
And I call it Rockstar. And you'll know why in a second. Think about your first day of school when you were a kid. You know.
Okay.
There's that certain smell. You know what? That the new clothes, the new shoes, the new books.
Yes.
You know, you go off to school. You've got a fresh start. You've got a new teacher. You know, the teacher doesn't know you. You don't know the teacher. And, you know, all your foibles from, you know, the previous school year or whatever foibles you might have had over the summer, they're all behind you now. And you've got this fresh start. So you go in there very excitedly. It's similar to when you start a new job. Everything seems fresh and wide open and lots of potential, et cetera, and a new relationship as well.
Right.
And the reason is, particularly for ADDers, because we are able to leave behind whatever, a lot of the baggage, the foibles, the mistakes, the fumbles of the past now that we're in a new situation. Well, think about this. When you wake up tomorrow morning, that day has never met
It's a brand new day.
It's a brand new day. You've never seen that day. That day's never seen you. And for all you know, for all that day knows, you're a rock star.
That's right.
So
if you
were to begin that day with just that simple notion, and just adding one more thing because you mentioned looking in your mirror, I keep on my mirror a Post-it note. It's a blank Post-it note in my bathroom mirror. So every morning when I go in there, I see this blank Post-it note. And what it tells me is that I can create any possibility I want.
That's right.
If I just declare it to be so. I'm not talking about I can go out and make a $1 million or I can go out and cure cancer. But I can really genuinely create any possibility. I can create the possibility of me being enthusiastic, energetic, affluent, abundant individual that can go out and help other people. And that's something that you can generate yourself. That's the exact opposite of negative self-talk. And
that's exactly
it's a great example of powerful mindfulness.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, the thing I was talking about before about the mantras, different mantras during the day. We made a list of them one night in group, and I typed them up and handed them out. Things like, today I can stay focused, That doesn't mean that every moment of the day, but the more you talk about the different things that you want to do, it's just what you were saying. What can I do today? What about this day is going to be so special for me because I'm going to stay focused and I'm going to get this particular thing that I've been procrastinating for a week now, I'm going to get that done. And, it's so possible for everybody for this to work because, I have a lot of people that come to me and they want me to fix them. And I say, that's not what I do. I give you the tools and I give you the positive statements and I give you all the things you need to fix yourself. I know that you're going to agree with me when I say this. There are many people out there who want that really quick fix. And doing the work, this isn't something that is going to happen right away. It takes time, and it's going to happen because you don't go through years and years of the negatives to turn it around in an hour. It takes time, but you got to do the work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example of a simple brain hack that works powerfully, but as you say, you have to do it. You have to practice it. You have to do it over and over again. And
right.
You mentioned earlier, one of the key, demons of ADDers is procrastination.
Exactly.
And there's a wonderful book called The Now Habit written by Dr. Neil Fior. And one of the key things that he talks about is the idea of never looking at a project. Because, when we ADDers look at a project, the more complex it is, the worse. We look at it, oh, my God,
exactly.
I wouldn't know what to do. So I'm just going to put it off another day. And putting off, and the only thing that launches you into doing it is, you got to the 11th.
Alan, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, what did you say? Because we lost you for a few minutes or a few
seconds. About that.
So you said never looking at a project in total. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, never look at a project, a big project especially, and say, I have to finish that dang thing. Because you'll be less likely to schedule time to do it. The thought of having to finish is the surest way to invoke all the mental and physical chemistry that supports procrastination.
Right.
The more painful or perceived to be painful a given task is, the more we will seek relief in avoidance or involvement in something more pleasurable. And the notion of having to finish something is almost always painful or threatening, especially for us 80 years. So Dr. Fior says, worrying about finishing is a form of perfectionism. Your failed attempts at finishing, I'm quoting him now, your failed attempts at finishing when you do take up the task reinforce your belief that the task is unfinishable.
Wow.
So then you will wait for that 11th hour jolt to drag you, kicking and screaming, into the finishing. which will surely yield a less than perfect end product. So don't think about finishing. You know, instead, schedule a time to start. And when you just schedule time to start something again, you're characterizing the to-do as a small bite. And Fuhr says, he says, you know, keep starting. Finishing will take care of itself. If you must worry, worry about starting. Never worry about finishing. And you know,
and you know what?
You
it's interesting. It's interesting is because one of the things that we do in this population, I work with adolescents and kids as well, and in that population, they have a very difficult time starting something. This is something I hear all the time. My own children, when they were younger, they're 26 and 22 now. So what I do with kids is similar but a little different. I'll break it down for them. So the reason they don't want to start is because they get this project from school that is supposed to be done in 4 weeks. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take little pieces of it and break it down and say, you know what, in the next 2 days, this I want you to start this, and this is the only thing you have to do. Don't look at the rest of it. Because I think that if you keep them focused on a little bit, then you're going to get them working on it. And I think it's the same thing for adults. And what he's saying is very, very true. But more in the younger population, the whole idea of starting it is very scary. Same thing with writing. People in, who don't write well that are ADD, they have a very difficult time starting. Once they get into the process, it can be a little easier if they bullet point all their creative thoughts down on paper. But it's the whole idea of just chunking it, breaking it down, too. And
you,
not worrying
another,
about the end result. Yeah.
That is another great lesson I learned a long time ago, which is, and you're right, a lot of coaches call it chunking.
Right.
But especially when it comes to something like writing or a very complex project, you know, we procrastinate in the hopes that some, you know, solution will arise. And, okay, this is how I'm going to do it, or this is how it will be. And while we just wait and wait for that solution, which never comes. And what you need to realize is that the solutions only start appearing when you're in the work. So if you can just tell yourself, look, I'm not going to finish this thing. I don't have to finish it now. All I have to do is start it. And once you start it, that's when you will start to see, oh, I see, maybe this goes over here. Or maybe I need to get some of this. That's how you make things happen. That is a very powerful, mindful way of breaking through procrastination.
It's a very good point. I wasn't familiar. Does he write that book? Did he write it specifically for people with ADD?
No, he didn't. He wrote it just for anyone who is disempowered by procrastination. But you know, as you know, we are more disempowered than others.
His point, which I don't know if you see this, but I see, thank God I don't have this, but a lot of people I work with, very much perfectionists, and it really puts the brakes on when they're trying to even start something because they're so fearful that whatever they do is not going to be perfect. Now, we talk a lot about there's no such thing as perfect, but it's an anxiety issue. It's truly an anxiety disorder. This perfection thing. It's very difficult.
Yep.
That's why when I picked up on what he said about if you look at it like I have to finish it, for some with perfection, it's even difficult to start.
Yep. And he wisely portrays perfectionism as a conspirator to procrastination. Because as long as you're sitting there saying, well, I can't really start this up because I don't know how to do it perfectly, then you're just giving yourself license to not start it. And it's a killer, but it can be slaying. You can beat that.
Yeah. No, it's true. I like that. I really do. So what else do you have in the Zen Hacks?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we're talking about Neil Fuhr. He another one that I learned from him is called Have To Versus Will Do.
Yes.
And
to
paraphrase him again, you know, the more you feel that endless work will deprive you of pleasure and leisure time, the more you will avoid starting that work.
Right.
You know, the simple act of addressing a task before us as something I have to do,
right,
what it does is that throws that task into an unfavorable light. Right. And it throws our mental stance into one of victimhood and powerlessness, which
yes.
incites that negative physiological cascade that I mentioned earlier. So now
right.
you are pushing cortisol through your body instead of the dopamine and the good stuff that you want to drive through your body. So you think about this, you know, as an extreme example, you think about the besieged low-level employee who feels the oppression of the hierarchy above that just doesn't seem to appreciate how truly valuable and capable he is. This
right.
is a very defensive posture that puts the responsibility for one's lack of upward mobility squarely on others.
Right.
And, you know, when you feel such a systematic or systemic unfairness put upon you, then you will leverage that resentment, and it's subconscious, but you do, by procrastinating, withholding your best efforts in order to, quote-unquote, punish the authority or otherwise show some protest of a powerless victim. In this,
right.
in this way, we give ourselves a small sense of power over the oppressing party, you know?
Right.
But it's another form, it's another aid to procrastination, if you will. On the other hand, though, if you reframe the have to I will do,
mm-hmm.
this is an empowering launch pad from which to begin work. It's fueled by now a positive emotional stance and resulting physiological cascade. Now you've got a positive physical. I will do this. I choose
right.
to do this, with the
right.
key word being choose. And when we decide that a task is our choice,
right.
we are freed to act on a difficult task, to think creatively about it, not to mention to be happier in doing the very work. So that's another great concept from Fiore that I use every day.
Right, and now that you mentioned the word creative, you know, I mentioned to you that I have this new book that's out called ADD Land, The Gift of ADD,
mm-hmm.
and one of the reasons I brought it out, it's just I compiled, it's a whole book of highly successful entrepreneurs, musicians, entertainers, writers, politicians that have attention deficit disorder. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I the reason I put this book together, and this is where I'm going with the thought process, is I was working with a couple of kids a couple of years ago, adolescents who were really getting depressed over their diagnosis. And I said to them, this came out of my creative brain, hey, you know what, guys, that Hollywood sign should say ADD Land. And I saw their face just kind of light up. What? I said, there wouldn't be a Hollywood if it wasn't for attention deficit disorder. We are the most creative population, and we are the elite population, out-of-the-box thinkers. But here's what happens, and I see it so many times with people in their creative mindset. When fear comes into play, the creative part of our brain shuts down. And so what the mindfulness has been able to do for so many people that I've worked with, staying in the moment, not running to the future because it causes anxiety, not going to the past, it causes depression, there's peace and harmony in the moment, and that fear disappears, and the creative side comes out tenfold.
Now, and what you're saying very neatly brings together pretty much everything we've been talking about since the top of the hour, which is starting with negative self-talk and the stress
right.
that creates.
And,
right. You know, for instance, an oppressive feeling which suppresses your creativity, et cetera. Now, again, there's plenty of science behind this, too. You know, when you are stressed, you are sending less oxygen to your brain. And
absolutely.
When you've got less oxygen going to your brain, you are not thinking as well. So
right.
when you can find ways of being more mindful and peaceful in your mind without,
yeah.
you know, traipsing through a bunch of negative stuff, and this will maybe segue into another brain hack, a simple form of meditation. When you can be more in that state of openness and a feeling of freedom and a lack of worry and stress, you are
right.
much more likely to get those ideas coming into your head and be able to do something with them. Maybe this is why people get ideas in the shower. Maybe
yeah.
this is why some people get – I get ideas, for instance, when I do motorcycle racing. That,
oh, wow.
That very intense experience tends to like – and it's kind of an ugly analogy, but it's like flushing my brain. It's like flushing out my brain, like flushing a
wow.
toilet.
Well, I would think that you'd have to stay in the moment when you're riding a motorcycle.
you
can't be anywhere but in the moment. So, yeah, that would be a very powerful experience.
The moment that you are done doing it, you feel as though your pipes have just been completely cleaned out. And
wow.
Because you're at peace. What you've done is you have put yourself so much in the moment, because if you're not in the moment on a racetrack doing 170 miles an hour, you're going to hurt something. And I've
right.
done that before.
Wow.
So because you have to fill your mind with the present moment, you can't fill it with any negative thoughts. You can't
right.
wear yourself out with negative thoughts. And so, again, I think this segues into something that I call shut up your mind, which
okay.
is a simple point. I know you'll have something to riff on this because you and I talk about meditation. But, you know, people hear the word meditation and they think, oh, you know, that's going to be tough. You know, if you're sitting down
yeah.
with my legs crossed in a funny way, and I'm going to have to find quiet. I can't quiet my mind. No way. And I, let alone sit still for 20 minutes. Well, listen, meditation can be something as simple as listening to your thoughts, just sitting down somewhere, listening to your thoughts and identifying them as, okay, that was a thought about the past. Okay, this is a
right.
thought about the future. And then just brushing them aside until
right.
there's really kind of nothing there. Maybe you just think about a nice a pool of water or a lake or a valley or something like that. And just bring your thoughts back to that thing. You don't have to do this for 2 hours. You don't have
no.
to do it for 20 minutes. You can do this for 20 or 60 seconds and
right.
get benefit from it. Because
exactly.
if you think about this, if I were to ask you, what would you rather do, 30 push-ups in a row or 20 push-ups and then a few seconds rest, and then you bang out the last 10, which would you think would be easier? Well,
the second
one would be the latter, obviously.
Right.
And so just a brief rest for our muscles allows us to power through. And it's
right.
much the same for our brain. If our brain is constantly churning, especially ideas, constantly churning on worries and negatives, thinking about the past, the future, this, that, ideas, if we can just quiet that down for a few seconds, hopefully
yep.
minutes, it's like resting that muscle. And then when
yeah.
you then have to sit down and write that tough email and make that tough phone call, you're in a much better position to do it. So I call that shut up your mind, and that's a very simple form of meditation that anybody can do. Anytime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you also get very centered when you do that, too. And we do it very quickly in group. We do 3 minutes before the beginning of group. That's how we start it off. And it's just like bringing the when the thoughts come up, you just focus on the breath. And the breath
mm-hmm.
gets the thoughts out, and you're focusing on the breath. You know, for people who are listening who have sleep issues, I do want to share this with them because I, for years, had sleep issues, and when I got into meditation, I did recognize that the brain can't do more than one thing at a time. So if you're breathing, when you lay down at night and you breathe so you can hear your breath, your brain can't get you into that spinning thought routine, and I fall asleep. And now, ever since I started doing that, I have no problem at night falling asleep and staying asleep. So that's just a very quick way so you don't end up on sleeping medication, which can be very dangerous.
Well, and you know, speaking of mindfulness, that is a simple exercise of just being mindful of your thoughts.
Exactly.
And just saying, you know what, I am not going to let my worries and, you know, machinations stir. I'm instead just going to fill my mind with nothing more than the sound of my breath through my nostrils.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Very
and it
powerful
works.
Mindfulness.
Yeah.
And simple.
Very simple, and, you know, it's just, it's amazing how you wake up the next morning and you go, oh, my God, like, I fell asleep so quickly. And so many people struggle with sleep. I don't know if you speak to people about it, but a lot of my clients, it's a constant theme that I hear from a lot of people, that they struggle because of the thoughts that are constantly ruminating, especially when we lay down at night.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot about sleep hygiene, and I teach some of that in the videos. But, you know, the upshot here is really if you are not getting enough sleep, and
right.
the CDC has indicated there is a crisis of the lack of sleep in this country. But if you are not getting enough sleep or enough quality sleep, you really are exacerbating your ADD. And that has also been proven in research that
yeah.
Sleep deprivation – often looks like ADHD in non-ADHD people, but
yes.
Also that poor sleep quality is that ADHDers disproportionately suffered from poor quality sleep, in part because they have dysfunctional circadian clocks. But
right.
That when ADHDers are not getting enough quality sleep, they are performing at even lower levels than they are normally. So this is,
yeah.
Sleep is a very, very key issue.
Well, I mean, I think you and I can speak to that personally. How many times has that happened to you, that you didn't get a good night's sleep and the next day you have a meeting or you have something like, I'll have a school meeting early in the morning and for some reason I just couldn't get to sleep or I didn't stay asleep, I kept waking up. I'm feeling pretty scattered when I get up.
Yep.
So sleep
yep.
is powerful.
Yeah, and then what do we have for those of us who use medication, you know, whether medical or, you know, coffee or whatever, you find
right.
yourself having to compensate to prop yourself up, and that's
right.
not healthy either.
No. No, it's not. Absolutely not. Yeah, so do you have more of these? I hope so. These are great.
Oh, you bet. I'll
okay.
tell you what, let's have a little bit of interactive fun.
Okay.
Everybody's been, you know, listening to the radio on some occasion, and then there's some mistake in the radio studio and there's just a silence, an on air silence. And
okay.
it might sound something like the following. I'm just gonna be quiet for a few seconds, all right?
Okay.
That was 10 seconds.
Wow.
What's called in the radio business, dead air.
Wow.
When I make my Zen Brain Hacks presentation, I most recently did it in Liverpool, England at the Addis Conference. And if you're ever in England while that conference is on, man, go to it. It's one of the best ADD conferences you can go to. But
oh, great.
So I'm standing in front of a large group of people. I'm up on a stage, and I start my presentation by clicking to a slide that simply says, "We will begin shortly." And then I don't say anything. And I turn on my phone and I turn on my timer. And I stand there before these people who have yet to hear anything from me. And they're waiting for this presentation to start. And I make them wait 60 seconds. And so you know how long that 10 seconds felt. Imagine what 60 seconds is like.
Wow.
And then I finally put down the phone and I say, "That was 60 seconds. It felt like an eternity, didn't it?" And I say, "Well, you know, that's because it was an eternity." And the
right.
reason is because 60 seconds is an eternity it's an eternity when you are in a certain mindset. And in the right mindset, you could therefore have gotten quite a few things done in that time, right? Because it felt like
yes.
such a long time. You could have banged out a long postponed quick reply to a friend's email, setting a doctor's appointment online, or just writing a sticky note to remind you to do something later that you could not do in those 60 seconds. Imagine
right.
what 3 minutes would have felt like to sit there in an audience
mm-hmm.
watching me for 3 minutes and then getting the idea of, wow, if I have 3 minutes to do something, I can really do something. So this
yes.
is what I call reframing time, and this is a very powerful practical Zen brain hack. By the way, it was at least 60 seconds since I started talking after that brief 10-second pause. So
wow.
that went by very, very quickly. The point
yes.
is that we can flip a switch in our mind to regard a period of time that is before us in a different light and actually have it become more or less productive. Plus, we'll have the physiological response that is either, you know, that is the positive one if we regard that time, you know, in the positive way. Yes.
Exactly.
How many times do we run around like a chicken with our, you know, our heads cut off going, you know, I don't have enough time. I got to run out the door. I've got only a few seconds before I, you know, I'm going to be, well, I don't want to say be late because the problem is we are often too late. But, you know, the point is that we often generate this sense of, oh, I don't have time to do anything because I only got 3 minutes. But if you actually just stopped and were mindful of how long 3 minutes can be,
right.
you can actually bang something out. Now, Justine, as an ADHD coach, you know that this cuts both ways, which is this. You, as an ADDer, you are also likely to go and do that, quote unquote, just one thing, and then you will go on to another thing and another thing and another thing, never finishing any of them, but then realize, oh my God, an hour just went by and now I'm late for my daughter's rehearsal, right? So, you know, this does cut both ways. But if you have a few minutes, let's just say 5 minutes, and you otherwise would be thinking, well, I can't really do that because I've got to, you know, I can't go. And you know that you can just bang out that one thing and then get going. This is a great opportunity to be more mindful of just how long a minute or 5 minutes can be. And I think what you're doing here is very
powerful, because one of the biggest challenges for people in our population is time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm really good with time. I'm always on time. I can underline always because I'm never late. And I've shared with a lot of people a story about my two boys when they were little, the reason why I'm not late, something they said to me. And it's always stuck with me. And I'm pretty good at looking at time and being able to say what I can do. But in our population, people that I work with, it is very difficult for them. They get lost when they work on projects, when they do things by task instead of time. They can be working on something for 8 hours and all of a sudden look up and say, oh, my God, where did that time go? So what you're teaching them is powerful, to take 60 seconds and see what 60 seconds feels like. Take a minute or 2 minutes, and see what that feels like in 3 minutes. And eventually they begin to really get it. That's more or less how I taught myself about time. And also I worked back into my tasks. How long is this task going to take me? So I have an hour to finish this before I have to go. That's all I can have. But we lose track of time very easily in this population.
Right, and then you've got to set those alarms or the alerts or whatever so that you're not getting hyper-focused on something. But I love what you just said, which is that you have actually timed certain things, and you know how long it's going to take you to do something. So you might surprise yourself. Some of your listeners here might surprise themselves by, you know, when you sit down to, let's just say, buy a gift for someone on Amazon.com, or buy a baby shower gift, I'm just making this up, or make a doctor's appointment online, or whatever that is.
Right.
If you actually time yourself, you might find that these things, even though you put them off because I don't have time to do that right now, you might find that it only takes 4.5 minutes to do something like that. And if you could then go, man, that means I could actually take 5 things off of my to-do list in the next 30 minutes. And I'm always saying I don't have time to do anything on my to-do list.
That's right. Yeah. And the other thing that's difficult for people is multitasking, just what you're talking about. So if I sit down and I say, you know, here's what I'm going to do this morning. I'm going to buy the gift on Amazon. I'm going to go online and make the doctor's appointment. I'm going to check all my emails to make sure that I've answered them. And I'm also going to check my bank online. You know, that's multitasking.
Yep.
And if you can do it and you can time yourself and see how long these little things take, I've just accomplished 4 things.
Right. But now we also, and again, that there is that double-sided edge to it, which is, you know, we often think that we can multitask successfully. And unless you are, you know, finishing this up and then moving on to that, what happens is, you know, I'll use the example of the, you know, this Saturday I'm gonna clean the garage. I've been promising myself I would do this. So you get up, you're all psyched up. It's the one big thing that you planned on today, and you're walking toward the garage, and you go, you know what, let me just make a pot of coffee. And then you see the mail, and you check, oh, yeah, let me just go through the mail. And you go, oh, you know what, I got to change the litter in the litter box. And, oh, you know what, let me just do this. You know, I'm going to call so-and-so. Oh, here's so-and-so calling. And the next thing you know, you could just go on for that, and the next thing you know, it's 2 o'clock, and you haven't even made it to the garage. Now,
so
this is actually the opposite end of the spectrum, which is, you know, multitasking is something that if it's done in a very controlled way, you might be able to, and I wouldn't even call it multitasking. I would call it serial tasking, meaning you're doing things in a serial fashion. You get this done, and then you get that done. That's great.
What you were just talking about wasn't multitasking. Because what that is I call them exits. okay? So
yes.
I'm going to get up and clean the garage, but, oh, wait a minute, I got to, let me go make coffee. That's exit number one. Oh, wait
yes.
a minute, let me go to the mailbox. That's exit number two. So see, that
yes.
that's a little different, but the multitasking, you're right, we can get ourselves into a lot of trouble if we don't complete that one task and go on to the next one instead of
right.
just leaving them hanging out there.
Yeah. yeah, and what you call exits, I love that. I love that phraseology. What you call exits, Dr. Russell Barkley calls the but first syndrome, which
yeah.
is, well, but first I'll do this, and but first
yeah.
I'll do that. But,
exactly.
But here is a Zen brain hack that can help you to stay on task and get the thing that you're doing done.
Okay.
And it's a really, really incredibly simple thing that, again, if you just practice it and do it, you will find yourself getting more stuff knocked off your to-do list. So
okay.
the way to get really engaged in – well, let me back up, actually. A key thing for us ADDers to know is that we ADDers do not prioritize based on what is most important. Like
right.
you would think would be the We prioritize based on what is most interesting at the moment.
Exactly.
And that's why we are always pulled away from the important things and into
that's
these
right.
trivial, smaller things, and then pulled away from those things into other things, et cetera. So if you are just mindful of that, if you are just aware of that fact, boom,
right.
you can actually get some traction. So now, the way to get really firmly engaged in a task is to determine forcefully that, let's just say I'm sitting down, I've got to write an important email. I'm going to sit down and go, this is what I'm doing now. There's nothing else. And this is the only thing
that's
that I'm doing
being
now.
In the moment. That's exactly right.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I actually
mm-hmm.
put a little sign on it. It's my sign is a blue sign with black letters, and it says, what I'm doing now. And I put that, you know, figuratively on that email task.
Okay.
So that when I get the urge to check my Facebook page or to check my email or
right.
when the phone rings and it's a friend of mine with what I know is a non-urgent call,
right.
that thing I label, and you'll forgive the French, well, I'll just say BS. That is BS that I'm not
right.
doing now.
That's exactly
BS,
right.
And it's not what I'm doing right now. Now,
no.
I don't mean that this is not I don't mean any offense to my friend. I don't mean that it's not important at some point to check my emails. But compared to this email that I'm writing, it's BS. So
right.
if you want to not get your email done, go ahead, answer the phone, waste, and then you'll go, okay, you know what I'm doing. So now, the tougher thing to do is to resist something that is important but still not what you're doing now. And you
right.
label that just the same. You say when something important, let's just say that my sister texts me and says, hey, I need to talk to you. Call me when you can. Now, that's, you know, phrased that way, it sounds pretty important. She didn't say, call me right now, I have to talk to you. She said, call me, I need to talk to you. That means that it can wait until after. So what I'll do is I'll write a sticky. Call my sister.
Right.
And put that right.
right
on my computer. So now I've labeled that important, but not what I'm doing now. And I have a little sign in my head that I've created. It's blue with black letters. So now
right.
you can imagine, if you can powerfully put these labels on things, you will, and be in the habit, I tell you, I hear clients of mine and others, that customers who watch the videos, they write me emails saying, I can't tell you how powerful this is. I always find myself saying out loud, that's not what I'm doing right now.
Right.
I do this on a plane. I'll be sitting on a plane working on something, and I'll get, you know, tempted to do something else or move to something else, and I'll utter, you know, without realizing I'm saying out loud, that's not what I'm doing now. That's bullshit. I'm not doing
it. Right, then, right. No, it's exactly
person,
right. It's true.
The person in the seat next to me says, I'm sorry, were you talking to me? I said, oh, no, sorry. You're actually bullshit that I'm not doing right now, so leave me alone. All right, so that's another
exactly.
Brain.
Yeah, and, you know, the other way that I like to put it with clients too is, you know, when you're on a track, when you got your train on a track and you're moving forward on that track, don't get off that track. Don't let that train switch tracks. You've got to stay on one track. But the mindfulness piece of this whole thing is so powerful because whatever way you want to say it, that's not what I was doing. That's what I have to do now. That's not what I was doing now. Stay on the track. The whole underneath piece of this is in the moment. And if you're in the moment and you're not running to the future or the past, you're able to do what's in front of you and get it done. Yeah. That's why mindfulness is so powerful.
Yep. And again, you know, as we were saying early on here, you got to do it. You got to practice it. It's not something where you just listen to Justine and Alan talking about this, and then tomorrow it's going to change
no.
how you do things. You have
right.
to do it. You have to try it. And what we actually do in the videos for each of the strategies that are taught, there's an action step. And the action step for this particular one, which is May 8th, it's called Doing Now, is like an active game show where you are confronted with different interruptions, and you have to decide whether it's BS that you're not doing now or important but not what you're doing now. So we actually have fun with it a little
That's
bit.
Great. That's great because people with ADD love to have fun.
Absolutely. And what I don't understand is, you know, again, with all due respect to all the great authors who have written great, great books of how to do stuff, I wish there were a video for every that came along
You're
with
right.
every book. Because
yep.
I'm a terrible reader. I can read some
yep.
books, but most of them not. So that's why I created the videos.
Yeah, and that's why my book is all pictures.
There you go. We're visual learners.
Because you really don't – I mean, you know, my first chapter is written by me. Other than that, these are all people that are highly successful people. And, you know, I have to tell you something. When you look at a kid gets diagnosed, an adult gets diagnosed, and it's looked at like, oh, my God, this is a death sentence. Well – okay, how do you pull yourself out of there? If you don't start from the very beginning looking at it as a gift. This is truly a gift. Who do you know, other than people with ADD that are as successful entrepreneurs, and look at you and me and all the other people that are doing this, because why? Because we put our stuff together and we put one foot in front of the other and we said, you know what, we're going to get out there. And we're going to help other people. And the people that are so successful in Hollywood. I mean, who can put those movies together? So this is where kids are coming up in school. My own boys. I struggled in school with the mundane, boring parts. My boys did. And that's why I said to them, guys, whatever you want to do, it's fine with me. You know, nobody has to go to Harvard and Yale. It's, you know, and you don't have to be doctors and lawyers. And they both went off and did their creative thing because that is what their passion is. And, you know, what we do, we have a passion for it. I can hear it in your voice. You can hear it in mine. And if you don't have a passion, you can make all the money in the world. And if it's not making you happy, it's not going to work. This is what our population can do best,
and
to do this kind of work.
Yep, and the passion thing is absolutely key. I was actually talking with a gentleman last week who came up to me and said, hey, you know, I hear about ADD Crusher and I heard about your videos and everything. I'd love to learn more. And we talked a little bit about his diagnosis and treatment. He said he's been off meds for about 6 years. And I said, well, what changed? He says, well, I got a job in an industry that I love.
Yeah.
And he's web design. And he says, I just am so... you know, jazzed about what I do, that it basically fires up my brain. And it's just absolutely true. And I have found that the more I am focused on the things that I'm passionate about, the less and less I need my medication, although it's still
You know,
there.
I've been off my medication for 4 years. You want to know why? Because of mindfulness.
Why?
Mindfulness.
That's great.
Because
that's awesome.
I just embraced it and really saw the power behind it. And the process of getting off the meds was I started to have shaky feelings when I was on 30 milligrams of Adderall. And so my doctor started to lower it. And before you know it, I was on 5 milligrams and I didn't need it anymore. So
That's
if
great.
I could do that, because I'm very ADHD, anybody can. That's what this mindfulness stuff can do for you.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I'll use that as a segue into one of the more kind of subtle Zen hacks that we have here, and it's called understanding, or it's called dissection of frustration.
Okay.
And this goes back to that stress thing and the negative physiological cascade that we create when we engage in negative self-talk or we are stressed, et cetera. Again, it's the opposite of creativity. It's the opposite of freedom and power. But, you know, think about you're stuck in traffic, right? And you're
right.
at risk. You're going to the airport. You're at risk of missing your flight. It's like one of the worst times to be stuck in
right.
traffic. You don't know what the cause of the jam is up ahead, but things are definitely not improving. And you think to yourself, or you might even say out loud, come on, let's go. Or,
right.
you know, what the heck is going on up there? If you're a New Yorker, you might throw in a few more, right? Or
right.
you're at a traffic light.
Right.
And you're just chirping your horn a little bit at the older gentleman in front of you who doesn't see that the lights turn green. And you're like, come on, let's go, buddy. Come on, what are you thinking?
Right.
You know, in addition to our entreaties, right, we might also white-knuckle or pound a bit on the steering wheel, right? We might make
mm-hmm.
some space, we might roll our eyes. These are all things that every human being does except for the most mindful among us. But neither the source of the traffic jam nor the old guy in his enclosed car can hear or see you. So
right.
why do we do and say these things?
Right, exactly.
And
we do this all the time in group.
It is
yeah.
because subconsciously we think that if we plead passionately enough, and this is just very subconscious, come on, please, let's go, that by some force in the universe will actually hear us and something might just budge.
Right.
You know, it might
doesn't
take
work
a time,
that way.
It take time to get your head totally around us, but, you know, you think about it, that really is true. There's no other explanation for why we do things like this. Now,
right.
all the while that we're doing this, we are generating stress hormones, right? We're burning mental and spiritual fuel.
Right.
And also, we are not listening to an audiobook. We are not creatively thinking about a tricky issue that we'll face at the meeting tomorrow.
That's right. That's right.
We're otherwise not using the opportunity to create some possibilities.
Right.
And, you know, this realization, when applied any time there's a situation that is out of our control and delays
right.
or frustrates us, this is the brain hack that immediately reverses the stress hormones and creates a clearing for some problem-solving thoughts or some gratitude prayers, right, or a phone call to just call someone and say, hey, I love you, or I
right.
was just thinking about that project, and you know what? So there's, and I'll just leave this one with I actually have a wonderful quote here from Charlotte Joko Beck. Life always gives us exactly the teacher we need at every moment. This
That's
includes
exactly
every,
right.
every misfortune,
yeah.
every
yeah.
red light, every traffic jam, every obnoxious supervisor or employee, every illness, every loss, every
yeah.
moment of joy or depression, every
right.
breath. This,
yeah.
it gives you exactly the teacher that we need at every moment if we are willing to be an eager student. So this is a great, powerful mindfulness thing. It's one of the little bit more subtle ones, but I knew you would
and
like
And, you know,
this one.
The Buddhists talk about benefits of things that happen. And they actually talk a lot about the Buddhists, who are the people who really started the whole mindful movement. And pretty amazing, because all the negative things that come up for us, they can all be benefits. And one of the things that we talk about in group a lot, people will come to group and they've traveled a long way. We have somebody who comes from Ventura, and, you know, they may be stuck in traffic. And what I say to them is, you know, what's interesting is we get really stressed out when we're going to be late for a plane or we've got an appointment, a doctor's appointment, and what's happening in front of us is out of our control. So here's the question that I have my guys in the group ask themselves, guys and girls
mm-hmm.
or women. So is it going to change the outcome? If we start banging the steering wheel and cursing at the old man in front of us, is it going to change the outcome of what time we're going to get to someplace?
Right.
No.
Right.
And that, for my, powerful, because if you really put a thought cap on that one, it makes a lot of sense. It's not going to make the traffic move any faster. You're not going to get to the airport any sooner. You may miss that flight or you may not. And your
mm-hmm.
idea of make a phone call, put an audiobook in, do something productive so that
right.
you're not screaming and yelling and causing all that stress to come up where you're absolutely causing harm to yourself.
So you are indeed not able to affect the outcome of the traffic jam,
Right.
But you can affect other outcomes.
Exactly.
You can create something right there. And not only
right.
that, when you find yourself able to do these things, and then you think back to when you used to, you know, kick and scream like a, you know, 5-year-old, which we all do it, but
right.
it's such a great feeling when you're able to sit there and go, you know what, I'm sitting here in traffic, Dan, and I feel great. And
right.
I, you know,
it is.
I just use
it is a great
so
feeling.
Well. That is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, it really is, because, you know, being able to regulate our emotions is something, as I talked about before, can be very difficult for us. So that whole getting into that place of zen, of just being peaceful and doing something productive and feeling really good about the fact that you haven't screamed once in the car, and I'm sure people laugh, but it's true, can really make you feel like, wow, this is a big accomplishment. This is really big.
Now, you know, you mentioned the, again, the emotional
regulation,
control
yeah.
of the 30 beers, yeah. And I don't know, how are we doing on time?
Oh, we've got a half an hour, and we do have
great.
Somebody that's waiting to speak to us. He's actually a friend of yours from New York. So
great,
we're going
to
put
it. So do you want to take a question now? Or?
Yeah, I think maybe we can do that. Can we can we get Robert on the phone? Let me click him in. Hi, is this Robert?
Yes, it is. Good evening. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay, Alan, it's Robert from the Manhattanville ADD Support Group. How are you?
Hey, Robert, how are you?
All right. You know, you are not going to believe this. I was listening to you from the very beginning, and one of the things you spoke about right up front was an issue that is of prime importance, and that is the, as you know, we're all ADD, so we jump around a lot. But in the very beginning of this, you spoke about cortisol. And it just happens to be that we had a speaker at our November lecture in New York City. And one of the things he brought up was that the key ingredient to helping people lower their stress and anxiety level on a biological level is to reduce their cortisol level. That will give people the ability, when you reduce your cortisol, you reduce your stress and anxiety. When you reduce your stress and anxiety, you reduce your impulsivity to a certain extent. When you reduce that impulsivity level, it gives you a chance to think more clearly and more coherently, and you make less impulsive decisions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I heard you say that, and I'm like, I do not believe this. This is a clinical doctor who was talking, and I'm saying to myself, wow, Alan hit the grand slam, and he did not even know it.
That's awesome. And I have to say, well, first of all, thanks for joining the call and thanks for chiming in.
Thanks to Justine, because I just became acquainted with her recently, and she told me that you were going to be on her show tonight. And I'm like,
yeah.
This is phenomenal, because he was our featured September speaker at our meeting, and he did a phenomenal job. I have to tell you, he's a great speaker.
That's great.
Thank you so much, Robin. I have to say, if it weren't for Robert's group, this is the Manhattan Adult ADD Support Group.
Yes.
And Robert and his buddy Paul Jaffe, they have been running this thing since like 91 or something like that.
Wow.
And if it weren't for this group's existence, I might not have had a diagnosis. It was only because back in 1996 or 7, I saw an ad for them on the back page of the Village Voice when I was living in New York that said, you know, tonight's support group, our presenter will talk about doctors who get it and doctors who don't. Because I had already been told 5 years previous that I walked in with what I thought was, you know, an ADHD, and the doctor said, Alan, that's a myth created by the media. You need to do more crossword puzzles. And so for another 5 years, I went undiagnosed. And it was only because I went to that group, Robert's group,
that's great.
That I got the light bulb went off, and I went and I got a diagnosis shortly thereafter. And it is by far the best group in New York. And if any of our listeners here,
there's a lot of them from New York.
Make sure.
Yeah, that's great, Robert.
And we're having a meeting tomorrow night at the McBurney Y at 6:30. So it's on 14th Street between 6th and 7th. But one of the other things I want to tell you is you speak about the brain hacks, and that's I guess the book that you're coming out with.
No, it's just a presentation that I do, and we'll probably be making a video on it. But
okay, well, I suggest you really do a great job, because I don't know if you're aware of it or not. If you go back into computer terminology, ethical hacking, the issue of hacking, you know, doing positive things on computers and programming, that goes back 10 or 12 years. There were a couple of very famous people in the computer industry who created that about maybe 10 or 12 years ago. quote, ethical hacking in computers. So these brain hacks, it brought that right back to me also. It's so close, it's unbelievable.
It's great.
That's great.
And often
computer hacks are simple things that make a big difference, and that's exactly what these are. Now, obviously, you got to know what you're doing if you're going to be a computer hacker, but...
computer hacking is a positive thing because they were talking about things to do ethically to make the industry a better industry. They're not talking about the kids who do the bad things. In this case, it was good. So your brain hacks are really things to help people to strengthen their brain's ability to cognitively process things better.
Awesome.
That's
a
great analogy.
So I can't believe you guys hit such a grand slam tonight without even realizing it. It's incredible because I've been online since 97, and it's like, you know, I've been following the industry and everything. And like, and thing you've been talking about is just hitting it right where it needs to be hit. And I just hope the audience appreciates what you've been offering.
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I think that a lot of people out there are really, really hearing this whole mindfulness thing. You know, it's interesting. Because UCLA did a lot of studies on this with ADHD, also OCD. But you know what I just heard recently is that big companies are starting to use mindfulness in their meetings, like meditation before the meetings, just to get everybody centered, whether you're ADD
or you're not. The issue of lowering your anxiety level, when you lower your anxiety level, you lower impulsivity. When you're more sensitive, you're able to think more cohesively and more clearly. And the other thing is, in all honesty, is let's face it, a lot of ADDers have a lot of trouble reading nonverbal communication signals from other people. That is one of the key. My wife always tells me that I don't read people the right way because I'm so busy and thinking of that 12 million things.
Right.
And lowering all those levels gives you a chance to read people's nonverbal communication signals better, and it gives you an edge in business because you can think to yourself, okay, what do I need to do to get to the next level of business, whatever business you're in? And less mistakes mean more positive actions. More positive actions mean a better business result for you. So one thing ties right into the other.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's excellent. It really is. The whole mindfulness thing, I told you, it changed my life. I'm off medication because of it.
Because you were able to tone down the negatives, and when you increase the positive, when you increase the positive, it also has to do with the energy in the brain and the neurotransmitter activity in the brain, which is really what we're all about. And when you're able to regulate that and change that in subtle ways, you're able to change the entire formula of how you're doing things, and you don't need these artificial substances, you're able to do it naturally, and that's the best way to do it all. And then once you're able to do that, you find that you have a peace of mind, and that just enables you to do the rest of it.
That's exactly right.
Speaking of these natural ways of altering our brain and body chemistry, let me go into another brain hack now, which is it's not something you do entirely in your brain. You actually do it with your body, but it affects your brain. This is Ann Cuddy. Is a researcher who gave a TED talk about this, and they're called power poses. And if you think about the picture of Superman standing with his hands on his hips, Wonder Woman, same thing, legs apart, chin up, hands on the hips. You can see, if anyone remembers, Yul Brynner in The King and I.
Yes,
he
I
would
can.
Stand like this. This is called a power pose. And you can see this in nature as well. If you look at the alpha orangutan, he will often sit with hands clasped behind his head, chin up, and chest out. This is akin to the dominant gorilla chest beating. These are things that have analogies in the human world where striking these poses and holding them for up to 2 minutes actually increases your testosterone. Both sexes have testosterone production abilities, and reduces cortisol. And so if you, and there are a number of them, and if you just kind of, you know, Google Ann Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y, and her TED talk, you will see the range of these poses. When you are about to go into make a presentation or go into an important meeting, or you just need to freshen up, you know, refresh your mind in addition to doing the Shut Up Your Mind meditation that I talk about, if you were to strike one of these power poses, just, you know, go outside in the front yard or walk around your living room and strike this pose, It's very subtle. You don't necessarily feel it, but the science is there, and you are reducing stress, increasing your confidence, and what Ann, to take this a step further, what Ann Cuddy demonstrates is that you can actually affect the way people around you feel and interact with you. So this is
a very
powerful brain hack.
I think it's a great idea. I believe that. I really do. I've heard of her. I got to look at her TED Talk, though.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
the funniest thing is medically, you know, you speak about testosterone. Medically, of course, a lot of people with ADD and ADHD, men especially more than women, but than men, have issues with lower functioning testosterone levels, and also at the same time it becomes an endocrine issue. So, I mean, there's a tie-in between the natural and the medical.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry, Justine.
No, I was just, when he talked about the endocrine, there's adrenal. I've met a lot of people with ADD who have a low, they have adrenal failure, and this is one of the reasons that they get sick a lot, because that whole area is just the engine of the body, and it's not working right, you know, and it could very well be from all the stress.
And if I may just share one thing, I've been to several doctors over a period of time, and they always used to give me blood tests, and they don't work. And I'll tell you the reason why, because you need to go to a specialist, an endocrinologist, actually.
Yeah.
A good endocrinologist has a specific and a very special blood panel that they will give you testing for that tests for certain things that doctors do not test for in a CBC. Anyone who's been to an endocrinologist will tell you. So anyone who's out there is listening, if you do have a problem, don't rely on any doctor to give you a CBC and that CBC to give you the information you need. You need to go
to an endocrinologist.
And the endocrinologist gives you a specific blood panel. That blood panel tests for a lot more than a CBC, and that blood panel can sometimes come up with underlying issues that no CBC will be able to detect.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you for that. Yeah. So, Alan, what else? Alan, are you on? You're breaking up.
Still here. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you, yes.
Sorry about that. So a few minutes ago we were talking about the emotional regulation issues. And David Work, the founder and president of ADCA, the ADD Coach Academy, also Charles Barkley, Ari Tuchman, a lot of the experts, they talk in great detail about what's called the pause, the ability or inability to stop. And this is mindfulness, right, at its core. This
right,
is mindfulness.
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of enlightenment on the power of the pause for emotional control. And, you know, coaches and other savvy in the way of crappy executive function, you know,
we'll
see in a lot of the brain hacks that I'm sharing the presence of the pause to stop and be mindful of what you're thinking, how you're thinking, you know, are you gripping that, you know, are you cursing at the guy in front of you, et cetera. The pause is the thing which separates the emotionally enlightened from the, you know, the fly off the handle, oh my God, I just said the stupidest thing, impulsive people, right? And the trick is if you could only pause to first consider the impact of something you're about to say, right? You might have a chance to edit them, but you could only pause to first consider how stupid buying that, you know, another motorcycle is, you know, for me.
Right.
You know. You might recall that you just bought one last week. If only, you know, you could pause to, you know, to inventory your important personal items or family members before you just walk out of the house, you know. But this, it raises two questions. One, if I'm inherently impulsive, how the heck am I supposed to remember to pause, right?
Right.
And then two, even if it occurs to me to pause, what do I do in that pause to make things any better? So here's the brain hack. These are fair questions, and we need an external cue that reminds us at the appropriate time to pause, or at least to be ready to pause. And here is the cue. It is entrances and exits, right? If you are able to associate the idea of an entry preparedness to pause, you'd be much more likely to do so and then by the way, I mean both literal and figurative entrances and exits. So, for instance, when you enter a room full of people or enter into a conversation, this is your and to pause and be prepared to exercise self-restraint.
Right.
When you enter a store or when you enter any...
You know what, Alan, you're breaking up a little bit. I can't understand what you're saying.
I'm so sorry. We'll try and get a better.
All right, you're back.
Here.
Yeah.
Great. So, if you are about to enter a store or enter an e-commerce website, that entrance is your opportunity to pause. It's your cue to pause and ask yourself if you're about to make a stupid purchase. An even better one is when you exit your house. That doorway is your cue to pause and pat down your body to be sure you have everything you need, right?
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
that is the answer to question number one. How do I pause? Now, what do I do when I actually remember to pause? Well, you stop, you feel, you go. You think about a traffic light. Red is stop. Yellow would be feel, and then green would be go. And so what I do, for instance, when I get to my office in the morning, I get out of my truck, and I stop. I never just shut the door. I stop, and I feel my key in my hand.
Right.
I feel my phone in my hand. My phone is like my left arm.
And right.
I won't shut that door until I feel both of these things in my hand. I look at it, and
right.
then I close my door. When I head into the
office. That's the mind. Bringing
that's
yourself
the
in the moment.
Exactly.
You're pausing in the moment to check.
Exactly. But that pause is caused by I'm reminded to do it by an external factor because I am just now exiting something. So,
right.
So when I enter the office building, I want to make sure that I am clear about what I'm going to be saying, what I'm greeting people, what my mission is that day. So there's another pause that I've caused from an external cue, which is the entrance to the building. So, and now,
right.
when I enter my home, when I exit my home, all of this is a very, very powerful way to be to force mindfulness upon you and to have a chance to do the pause, which us 80
right.
years normally would never be doing.
No, and that's such a powerful thing, that just being able to stop and think, okay, do I have everything? Or stop and think, when I walk into that room, what am I going to say? Am I going to be quiet? How am I going to say it? Because that
right.
impulsivity piece of people walking in, I know that probably Robert experiences this running a group. I run an ADD group, and sometimes people can be extremely impulsive, and you have to remind them of where they are and what they're saying,
mm-hmm.
get them to really stop and think. And we've done a lot of work like that. We've had some real growth in this group with people that are stopping and thinking before they're talking and stopping and thinking before they're doing. I think this is part of the reasons why teenagers in our population can get in trouble sometimes. They get behind the wheel of the car.
And one thing Alan just said, which is a key thing, is that by stopping for that pause, sometimes you're so impulsive, the impulsivity causes you to make the social mistake, the miscue. And by
right.
stopping from that pause, you're able to give yourself that 30-second breath, or as he says, the 1 minute to 3 minute breath, to think,
right.
to size up the situation so that you prevent yourself from making the mistake you would have otherwise had made had the impulsivity grabbed you and taken over.
Right, right.
And that lack of mistake is the positive.
What did you just say? The what?
I said the lack of making a mistake is a positive.
Exactly. That's
right.
Exactly
because
right.
When you don't make a mistake and you don't get that immediate negative, like you write a cringeworthy moment where you realize you shouldn't have done it.
Exactly.
You can't take it back once you've done it. But if you didn't
no.
do it, there's nothing to have to take back. And that is
correct.
A positive affirmation that you feel that, hey, listen, I didn't do something wrong for once. Wow, yay. And you pat yourself on the back internally because you didn't do something wrong for once.
Right. That's right. Yeah, it's very positive. It's very positive when we can sit in traffic and not have to scream and yell at everybody in front of us. It's very positive when we have those impulsive ideas or thoughts and we can pull ourselves back. We're walking into a store and we say, no, I really don't need anything in the store. I'm just going to look and I'm going to leave because I don't need to buy. Those are all because in our population, money problems can run rampant.
Oh, yes.
It's about immediate gratification. Yeah.
Now, Robert is actually also referring a little bit to one of the things I teach in video too, which is scoring your successes. And this is also has to do with mindfulness. We
right.
ADDers tend to remember and dwell on all our failures. And
right.
when we have successes, we tend not to remember them, and we don't celebrate
right.
them. So mm-hmm. as Robert says, if you don't fail or if you don't screw up something, give yourself a major, you know, plus and take credit for it and celebrate it. And
right.
no matter how small the victory, if you are counting your victories, then this relates back to what we're talking about at the top of the call. We now have science that says that when you can have 5 positive thoughts for each negative thought, you can see a change in your life. So
that's
what
right.
I suggest. When you don't screw something up because you were mindful and you say, you know, I walked into the door of the meeting and I took an inventory of all the things and made sure that I'm going to, you know, say the right thing, and then I do the right thing, I'm going to give myself a victory. There's one positive thing that you've just given yourself. And you do that
right.
5 times through every negative, you can really see some powerful results in your life.
Yeah. No, it is. It's very powerful. Successes are a big thing, and it's something I tell everybody to build on, especially, I know you don't work with kids, but especially parents. I tell parents all the time because they're the next generation of adults that are coming up as ADDers, and, you know, they have this gift, but the thing is we have to remind ourselves that if we dwell on the negatives with children, it's a real issue. Your kids come home from school, the first thing, don't ask them, how was school today? Talk to them about their day. What was the best thing that happened today? Because I want to share in all the successes you had today. That's just so important for all of us to focus on the successes and not the failures or the negatives.
That's great.
But I think one other thing that you mentioned, Justine, and when you first started beginning, is that when people come to you, they expect immediate gratification, and you tell them
right.
quite candidly, you've been doing these things long for how many years? Please
right.
do not expect it to turn around in one day. Life
That's
does
exactly
not work
right.
that way, and this is not going to work any differently. But over a period of time, you're going to see how things are going to evolve, and then you're going to see that you turn the tide, and once you turn the tide, you're not going to want to look back.
That's right. Yeah, very true. It's really a powerful thing. So we have about almost 10 minutes left, really probably less than that because I'm going to sign off with you guys and just do my ending with everybody and talk a little bit about what I do every week. So what can we end with to both of you that you people out there will remember this podcast as being the best one I've ever done?
I tell you, well, I do want to let folks know that we've created a special promotional code for Miss ADD, and it's Miss ADD 1515. And
okay.
So if you find, if you come to addcrusher.com and you like the videos that are previewed there, you can also preview them on youtube.com/addcrusher. Use that promo code, Miss ADD 15. For 15% off any purchases.
Okay, that's
you know,
great.
This the whole world of mindfulness, I believe, is really only now coming into its own.
Yeah.
You know, Goldie Hawn has
yep.
been working in this area. The former actress has been working in this area.
10 Mindful Minutes, her book.
Yeah. And
she's got a great book.
Her not-for-profit, I think, is called Mind Up. And she's seeing empirical improvements with school kids. But
yep.
it's still not quite mainstream, and I think it's going to increasingly be mainstream. So this is a wonderful area for the ADHD world. And, you know, the great thing about it is, you know, it doesn't cost money. You can make these things happen in your mind, but as Robert said and as Justine said, you got to do them. You got to practice.
Yeah, you do.
You got to learn them, do them, practice them, and make them a habit, and then you could start to see changes in your life.
You know, I do want to share one more thing, too, which is free. And there's a lot of mindfulness apps out there that are free. And one of the things that has been very helpful for me is if I come home and I've had a stressful day where I've had maybe 8 hours of clients, which I'm sure, Alan, you can relate, can be very stressful. I will come home and pop that in and listen to it for about 30 minutes, just whether it's music or it's talking or whatever, and it can really help to cool down, the, like I like to say, the ADD brain,
mm-hmm.
so that I'm ready to enter the human race again after 30 minutes, so that I don't come in and I don't put this on, you know, everybody that's in the house or around at the time. I just go off and can be very helpful. And there's so many apps out there that are for free. So I'm just, you know, throwing that out for anybody who's listening.
That's great. And there you are causing the pause, too.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. And being mindful of causing that pause and not coming in the house and putting it on my husband who's been home. And, you know, when we do those kind of things, that's where you get in trouble in relationships, you know, especially when it works out that my husband and I are both ADD, which is wonderful. We have a lot of fun together. But I do a lot of work with couples where one's ADD and one is not. And, you know, that whole combination at times can be very difficult. So if you keep that, if you're coming home and you're feeling stressed, whether you want to take a look at, you know, Alan's videos or you want to go and get a free app online, do something that's really going to cause that pause and really help you to get more centered so that you can have a better night or day.
Okay, so my takeaway would be three things. First of all, if you live in New York City, you can look up the Manhattan Adult ADD Support Group. If you live in California, your support group, and based on what I've been hearing, you're doing a great job with your support group.
Yes, so it's wonderful.
I
love it.
We have both coasts covered this way. We have
yes,
New York
we do.
California.
What's happening in the middle?
And I don't know, actually. That's a good question. And of course, let's not forget Alan, because Alan's success comes from the fact that he's looked at things, he's had doctors, clinical doctors, look at things, and he's listened to them, and he's built his library around the feedback they've given him on how to give people concrete ways to help reduce their stress and improve their lives. And,
right.
and that's the reason for success. It's not just another one of these things. It's based on science and it's based on medicine. And that's what this whole thing is about. ADD or ADHD is a neurobiological disorder.
Right.
And that's the DSM. So everything's stemming from that. So now he's looking at that and he's speaking to, I mean, you mentioned Dr. Barkley early on.
Right.
I mean, Dr. Barkley is one of the foremost renowned clinicians or doctors in the field of ADD and ADHD.
Yes, he is.
And he's one of the top doctors. So to speak of him, you know, he's one of the people that is the founders of this whole thing.
Yeah.
He goes all the way back. So, I mean, he's built his entire collection of Crusher videos based on sound science and applied it to a practical way to help people out to improve their lives.
Right. I agree. And Alan is even going to be at my group, I think, February. Is that
yes.
right, Alan?
Yes.
Yeah, in February. So, and
great.
You're going to be on
I'll
again
be
before that. So listen, gentlemen, thank you so much. Alan,
well,
this has been
wonderful.
Thank you for
having me. I appreciate it. It was nice to be here. Thank you for letting me come in. I really appreciate it. It was very sweet of
you. Oh, it was great. It was really great. And Robert, I'm so glad we got to meet, and thank you for being on the show for a half
thank
an
you.
Hour. That was great having you here, too, because I love New Yorkers. You know that, so. I'm going to sign off with you two guys so I can do my end. And you have a great week
you
and a
too.
Good holiday.
Bye.
All right,
Bye,
take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I think this was a great show for those of you who are still listening. I just want to let you know for the next 2 weeks, I will not be having a podcast. Next week, for those of you who are in the Los Angeles area, I'm going to be on KFI AM 640. With Lisa Ann Walter, the Lisa Ann Walter Show. She has a wonderful program from 4 to 6. I'm going to be on next Sunday in the 5 o'clock hour, and it's also syndicated around the country. If I can get some information about this week, I will post it on my Facebook page, and if those of you who are listening would come and like my Facebook page, Miss ADD, and also my website, if you want to take at my website, missadd.com. So I won't be talking to you before the holidays are over, so I want to say for all of you, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and also Happy New Year. And we'll be back live in the new year. Take care, and please remember to stay in the moment.